Hello, this is Sharon. I welcome you to my reading of the Pantograph for today, Wednesday, February 4th, 2026. We will begin our reading on the front page, beginning with Bloomington Public Library, Raising Readers. Librarians help babies grow by mixing storytelling, music, art, play, and movement. On Tuesday, February 3rd, there was a lap-sit story time at the Bloomington Public Library. This program features stories, music, movement, art, and play to help develop early literacy and support baby development. You can visit bloomingtonlibrary.org/events for more information on events at the Bloomington Public Library. Normal explains moving firehouse. Data offered to answer station number 2 controversy. The town of Normal presented data and answered questions on the relocation of fire station number 2. The Normal Town Council on Monday heard from town officials in an analysis of the data that led to the decision to move the station from College Avenue to its new home at the intersection of Hershey and Shepherd Roads. This included highlighting the efficiency of the Normal Fire Department's response times. Their presentation came after multiple calls from residents and fire union members to have a work session on the town's relocation plans and data used to determine the new station's location. Normal Firefighters International Association of Firefighters, Local 2442, has also already been hosting town hall meetings where members presented their own community needs study that uses U.S. Census Bureau data, GIS software, and information from McLean County's Dispatch Center, arguing that closing of the College Avenue station would negatively affect response times. We all have the same goal, everyone in this room, in terms of providing the highest quality of exceptional service to our residents, said City Manager Pam Reese. We just wanted to take some time to explain how we get to the conclusions we get to and what's evaluated to make sure we can provide service. The town's presentation was created by town staff surveying response times from 2024 with the expected response time calculated and overlaid on a map of derived response times for each incident type. The model did not account for traffic, but used real response time data. The fire department responded to 6,577 emergency medical calls and 1,484 fire calls for a total of 8,061 calls in 2024, according to the department's annual report. The average response time for calls placed within the town's municipal boundaries was around 4 minutes and 28 seconds, while incidents in surrounding communities had longer response times. Just to summarize quickly, what we're seeing from these numbers is basically that they're not telling us at this time there's a need for an additional station, said Assistant City Manager Jenny Krieger. We have the capacity to respond to our calls, and we have the capacity to be a responsible mutual aid partner. Council members still had questions about the ongoing confusion and dispute between the town's standard service goal to respond to calls within 4 to 6 minutes 90% of the time, and the National Fire Protection Association, or NFPA, standard of covering an incident within 4 minutes 90% of the time. Normal Fire Chief Mick Hummer said NFPA's standard of 4 minutes 90% of the time is the gold standard that every municipal department tries to achieve, but rarely do any obtain that standard. That's what everybody tries to achieve as they move forward with their departments, municipalities, and everything like that. But most people never obtain that, Hummer said. Councilmember Kathleen Lorenz referenced the town's Vision 2040 plan, which was adopted in 2017, which states two key assumptions for the fire department's station relocation plan. These include that the corporate limits of the town do not grow past the current limits, and that the now former Mitsubishi Motor Company continues to generate a low call volume. We don't have Mitsubishi from 2013 anymore. We have Rivian. In 2026, a lot more people, no established internal EMS and fire brigade, a lot of construction, and a lot of expansion, Lorenz said. I would think that we need to know whether or not this assumption still holds. Despite the ongoing discussions, the College Avenue station officially closed on January 29th after personnel and the fire apparatus were moved. Hummer said other than the removal of the exhaust equipment, the property already has a request for proposal out for potential buyers to look at. Blake Chossy, Local 2442's Secretary and Political Action Committee Chair, was present during the council meeting along with other union members and supporters. Chossy said he and others did not know the extent of what would be presented during the meeting since it was not explicitly shared in the council documents. And although the topic of response times was covered, town staff did not mention anything about staffing standards and staffing requirements for certain incidents. We did not know about this until we saw the agenda, Chossy said. There's been no scheduling of a work session. We're still trying to get that figured out and figure out our next steps forward. Chossy added that previous comments of an independent study made by council members Andy Byers and Rory Rohrberg sound like the most reasonable steps forward in addressing the discrepancy between the union and the town's studies. There's a lot we can also just address in a public work session without the independent study, such as the short staffing, he added. We don't need to calculate response times or run maps to tell us that we're well below staffing standards. Today's Flick Fact question. Saturday Night Live alumnus Chris Catton is slated to do a comedy stand-up at downtown Bloomington's Jazz Up Front on March 1st. How did that venue land such a performer? And the answer probably didn't hurt that Catton, 55, a California native who grew up near Seattle, spends a lot of his time these days in the Springfield area, where his girlfriend, writer Maria Libri, lives in Chatham. They, in fact, met after Catton performed at Boondocks Pub in Springfield. From the back pages of the Pantograph, How Time Flies Locally. 100 years ago on February 4th, 1926. If smaller colleges and universities of the Midwest are to expand and carry on their sphere of usefulness, they must be given greater endowment. Dr. George C. Lewis and his wife, Ella Beach Lewis of Fairbury, had this thought in mind when they turned over to Illinois Wesleyan University an annuity gift of $100,000. 75 years ago on February 4, 1951. The Pantograph's women's editor last week asked for suggestions for ways women are making their food dollar go farther. Mrs. Evan G. Barnard of Normal sent in information that she can feed her family of four for $10 a week. This doesn't include milk, but it does include dog food, soap, floor wax, etc. 50 years ago on February 4, 1976. Jefferson School parents are opposed to the proposed closing of the grade school at Monroe and Gridley Streets next year. The prime objection was the crossing of major intersections to attend classes at Bent, located at 904 North Roosevelt. And 25 years ago today, February 4, 2001, their mission was to defend the Patriot missile batteries in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. And now these Army National Guardsmen from the Twin Cities and Kankakee have returned, proud to have served their country. They were all good soldiers when they left, but they returned as quite the professionals, said Executive Officer and Platoon Leader Carl Gilpin. The leadership skills they acquired are remarkable. You can't have these experiences in school. They really learned that the world is a lot bigger than Bloomington Normal. Normal OK's auditing mental health fund. The town of Normal, city of Bloomington, and McLean County are prepared to move forward with their audit of the county's Mental Health and Public Safety Fund. The Normal Town Council on Monday approved a memorandum of understanding between the three government bodies regarding the terms and scope of an independent audit of the fund. The fund, which had grown to a balance of $20 million, is made up of shared sales tax revenue kept in a separate fund for the county to use on debt services relating to jail expansion and renovation, criminal justice services related to the expanded detention facilities, and certain community behavioral health initiatives, services, and programs. The town, city, and county had previously approved pausing collection of the sales tax and fund activity in July 2025 after questions were raised about why so much money had accumulated in the fund. The memorandum, now approved by all three government bodies, will initiate the audit, which is intended to bring greater clarity to the county's use of the shared proceeds, according to town documents. The year-long pause began on July 1, 2025. Before the pause, the town contributed about $180,000 per month to the fund. Ever since 2016, both the town and city have transferred a total of more than $40 million to the county, or about $400,000 a month. The audit will be conducted by Clifton Larson Allen, LLP of Bloomington. In other news, the town approved the following: an ordinance reserving private activity bond volume cap of about $7.2 million from the state for mortgage certificates to assist first-time home buyers. Zoning text amendments pertaining to various sections of the zoning code. Democracy dialogues set. In recognition of the nation's 250th anniversary, a number of local organizations are facilitating an intergenerational dialogue about American democracy. The series, entitled Democracy Dialogues, will begin at 7 p.m. on February 17th at Illinois State University's Braden Auditorium. With U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Springfield, and former Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood, discussing the nation's founding ideals and how those principles have shaped history. Durbin and LaHood will set the tone for forthcoming democracy dialogue events throughout the community in 2026, according to a news release from ISU. During their dialogue, Durbin and LaHood will answer questions submitted by the community and curated by event organizers. The doors open at 6 p.m. for this free event. All ages are welcome. It was made possible by partnerships with the McLean County Museum of History, ISU, WGLT, the Dirksen Congressional Center, and others. We are proud to work collaboratively with community partners to bring this important celebration and dialogue to campus, said ISU President Andover Tarhule said in a news release. It is fitting that this event coincides with the university's founding celebration, inviting reflection on the shared history and values that connect the university with our nation as it approaches its 250th anniversary. For more information, you can visit news.illinoisstate.edu. Weather Spotter Class on February 24th. The National Weather Service is offering a free 2-hour severe weather storm spotting class in East Peoria on February 24th. The training is open to anyone 18 or over and will take place at the Paradise Hotel, 21 Blackjack Boulevard in East Peoria at 6:30 p.m. The session, led by a lead meteorologist from the NWS Lincoln office, will offer training on how to spot severe storms and allow attendees to learn how to become National Weather Service severe storm spotters. We are proud to partner with the National Weather Service to host this Weather Spotters class and encourage residents to take part in this important training, said Director Don Cook of the Tazewell County Emergency Management. Pre-registration is not required. For more information, you can contact Don Cook at dcook@tazewell-il.gov or visit the National Weather Service Lincoln Office's Severe Weather Spotter Training webpage at weather.gov/Lincoln/spotter. Barn keepers to hear about women in the 1840s. The McLean County Barn Keepers will host a public meeting this month. The meeting will take place at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 12th at the FS Building, located off west of State Route 9 and Westgate Drive in Bloomington. Bron Veerman of Bloomington will be the guest speaker. His talk will focus on the hardships women faced during the 1840s. Second City Show coming to Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. The best of the Second City will be celebrating 65 years of laughs by bringing an improv comedy troupe to the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. The performance will take place at 7 p.m. on Friday, May 1st, at 600 Northeast Street in downtown Bloomington. Doors will open at 6 p.m. The Second City, based in Chicago, is credited with launching the careers of several comedians, including Tina Fey, Stephen Colbert, Steve Carell, and Keegan-Michael Key. The troupe is known for high-energy improv with sketches, songs, and unforgettable characters. And this show brings a hand-picked selection from the Second City's comedy archive, reimagined by today's comedic voices, according to a news release from the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Pre-sale tickets will be available starting at 10 a.m. today via Ticketmaster, with a general public sale starting at 10 a.m. on Friday, February 6th. Bloomington's five-day forecast: it will be very cold today with partial sunshine. You can expect 3 to 6 hours of sunshine, with average relative humidity of 80% and a high temperature of 25 degrees. It will be cold tonight with increasing clouds, average relative humidity of 85%, and a low temperature of 11 degrees. Tomorrow, Thursday, will be breezy with a mix of clouds and sun. Temperatures are expected between 31 and 28 degrees. Friday, windy. There will be periods of sunshine, and temperatures are expected between 41 and 18 degrees. Saturday will be partly sunny and return to chilly temperatures. The high will be 31 degrees and the low 21. And that will continue on Sunday with a breezy morning and cloudy skies, temperatures between 33 and 16 degrees. Jenna Smith, nutrition and wellness educator with the University of Illinois Extension, serving Livingston, McLean, and Woodford counties, uses her experiences as a registered dietitian and nutritionist to deliver impactful information and programs to those counties. Jenna writes a weekly column called Healthy Families, and today says, antioxidants make many foods super. You probably know by now that antioxidants are good for us. Foods such as berries and pomegranates are deemed superfoods because of their abundance in antioxidants. And what exactly are antioxidants, and are foods that have them really that super? Well, antioxidants are substances that protect your cells against free radicals, those molecules that damage your body's cells and play a role in heart disease, cancer, and other chronic conditions. Our bodies produce free radicals during metabolism, but they may also come from external factors such as air pollution, cigarette smoking, alcohol consumption, and exposure to sunlight. Luckily, our bodies also generate antioxidants to help combat the free radicals effect. But without enough antioxidants, free radicals can do some damage. That's why it's important to consume plenty of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, which are rich in antioxidants. While you may assume that antioxidants are all vitamins, relatively few of them are. There are thousands of different antioxidants. Some are minerals, while others may be enzymes. Different antioxidants fight different free radicals, and different types of foods have different types of antioxidants, which is why it is critical to eat a variety of foods. Instead of thinking that any one fruit or vegetable is super, think of them all as super. If you only ate those that are billed super, you would miss out on the many combinations of nutrients that may protect your health. And Jenna offers this recipe for a fresh kale and vegetable salad full of antioxidants. Your ingredients are 2 tablespoons lemon juice, 1 tablespoon cider vinegar, 4 teaspoons olive oil, 1 teaspoon maple syrup, 2 teaspoons of fresh ginger root grated, 2 cups of kale chopped, 1/2 cup of cauliflower chopped, 1/2 cup of broccoli chopped, 1/2 cup of cabbage shredded, and 1/4 cup of fresh cilantro chopped. Combine the lemon juice, vinegar, olive oil, maple syrup, and ginger in a large bowl and whisk well. Next, add the kale, cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, and cilantro to dress, toss to coat well, and then serve. This recipe will yield 5 1-cup servings. The Pantograph has a commitment to accuracy, and they'd like you to tell them about any issues regarding accuracy or fairness that you find or hear in the paper. You can contact them by calling 309-820-3240 or email ojacobs@pantograph.com. If you'd like to look at past corrections, you can visit pantograph.com/corrections. Some more important things from the Pantograph. To place an ad, you can email jkehias@pantograph.com. For classifieds, you can call 309-820-3357 or email classified@pantograph.com. For legal and public notices, call 309-820-3209 or email declegal@lee.net. To place an obituary, email obits@pantograph.com or contact 309-820-3241. And when you see breaking news happen, you can contact the newsroom by calling 309-829-9000 or email newsroom@pantograph.com. They're also interested in hearing your story ideas, suggestions, and announcements. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for Wednesday, February 4th, 2026. Please stay tuned.